Radio 1180 WHAM proudly welcomes you to Soundbites. This is America's longest-running computer show. Call the show now, 222-1180. The Choice 1 toll-free line, 1-800-295-1180. Or Star 1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Soundbite. You know, I get tired every time I hear him say it's the longest-running show, and then I remember we don't run continuously. We
yeah, really.
Off, so I feel better about it. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And on the buttons over there is Rob Linton, who apparently isn't going to talk to us right now.
He's the phone.
You're listening to Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. We're going to take your calls in just a couple of minutes at the numbers you already heard. Before that, we're going to talk about the news, and we'll start with the Mac news from Steve.
Yeah, the iMac is so hot, you can't get one.
Okay, moving right along.
Apple announced it was they've taken more pre-orders for the new iMac than they have for any other model in their history, including the original iMac, which broke previous records. We've already sold out of our first batch of them, and we're waiting for our second, but we're waiting to get on the list to order our second batch. So for the general public, it may be a few more weeks. If you didn't order one the second after he announced it,
right,
it's going to be a few
and
more weeks.
And you can understand there are places you can't even see them because they sold the demo models.
Right.
Never got a demo.
Right. All of the floor models from the Macworld show went to the Apple stores as their demo model. And in fact, at our user group meeting last week, one of our members actually drove to Buffalo to take a picture of one to bring to the meeting.
Only Mac people would do that. I can't. IBM people wouldn't cross the room to take a picture of Bill Gates. These guys would go to Buffalo to take a picture of a computer sitting on a shelf.
Well, picture was actually of him trying to steal the computer away.
Well, I'm surprised that they'll let them even sell the demo. You know, most places you got to keep it there
right.
for a certain length of time so you can promote it.
I have one for the other people to see, but someone must have offered enough money.
Well, the other thing, of course, is that if you've got pre-orders that are so far in advance, it doesn't make a lot of sense to not sell one.
Yeah.
I mean, later on they can put out demo models.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's go on to Dave.
All right. The one thing I want to caution folks is we're right into the heart of it. Granted, you know, the weather has been kind of mild, but now that it's getting colder and folks are closing up the homes and everything else, the one thing that you really want to watch out for is static electricity. If you're going to, go to your computer, all of a sudden you're walking along the carpet and you go to sit down, you might get a nice jolt. So it's a good idea to touch the side of the case or some other metal object before hitting the keyboard because you can zap your machine.
Even get an anti-static mat. It's really, really bad for your computer. You might jump, your computer will die.
Okay. But definitely you want to watch out for that because it is running rampant. Now, I've already hit two clients that I got one heck of a jolt off of mess up your machines.
Yep. And on the Microsoft front, without comment, Microsoft opens war on hackers, seeking to restore Microsoft's tarnished reputation for developing secure and reliable software.
When did they ever?
See, that's definitely without comment. Bill Gates has distributed a company-wide memo calling on employees to place increased priority on making the company's products, quote, trustworthy, unquote.
And I got some swampland for you, too.
The new emphasis on security will include the unprecedented step of stopping development on new operating system software for the entire month of February, the shortest month, and sending the company's 7,000 system programmers to a special security training program. The company also plans to re-examine all of its Windows operating system code in an effort to find security flaws.
Excuse me, why didn't they do this, like, maybe a few years ago?
In an effort to find security flaws, I think if you just close your eyes and point. The new memorandum calls on the company's software developers to fundamentally change the balance they strike between adding new features and making software fundamentally secure. What's interesting about this is that, you know,
that they even made the stupid statement.
Well, you got to admit that for the longest time, Microsoft has not really focused on security or working with the enterprise. But once Bill Gates wakes up to something, Microsoft does bend all its efforts to it. So I think this is eventually going to result in a year or two.
Maybe his wife was in the same room.
Yeah, right. But the point is, in a year or two, we're actually going to see a semi-secure version of Windows. You know, and I thought hell would freeze over first. But we're going to go to the phones now. And our first caller is Bruce from Henrietta. Welcome, Bruce. What's your question?
Hi, guys.
How you doing?
Greetings.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Well,
I wanted to let everyone know that the IEEE Computer Society is sponsoring a presentation on January 23rd at the Kodak Camera Club. That's in the basement of Building 28, or some people know it as the Theater on the Ridge. And yep. The topic's going to be from e-commerce to e-business, the convergence of business and technology. It'll be presented by John Foster, a principal e-business architect at Kodak.
Cool.
I thought I'd let everyone know that this presentation is out there, too.
Excellent. Well,
appreciate it.
And when is this?
It's going to be on the 23rd of January. I have a website which I can email to you guys.
That's this coming week.
Yes.
Okay. Great.
You can post it on your
soundbites.org.
We will.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, and you guys have a wonderful weekend.
You too.
Thanks. You too. And don't forget, give us a call at 222-1180 if you're in the 585 area code. Outside that area code, it's the Choice One toll-free hotline at 800-295-1180. And if you're a Verizon Wireless customer and pulled over to the side of the road, it's Star 1180. Our next caller is Bill from Greece. Welcome, Bill. What's your question?
Hi there. I got a couple lingering problems left over from installing a new computer running XP.
Mm-hmm.
I am also using Office 97, and when I start Excel, I get a window which says compile error in hidden module TBRUN9. Okay, if I say okay, it goes away. The thing runs fine, except when I close it, I get the same window. If I go to help,
it's a DLL.
As a protected module can't be displayed, this error has the following cause and solution. It's something because a project is protected. I don't know what it's talking about.
Should I just
reinstall the whole damn...
Well, it probably has something to do with the age of the software, that Windows XP and Microsoft Office are both using a lot of the similar shared DLLs.
But I put 97 on my machine to the shop, and it was running fine.
Have you loaded all the service packs?
At first it told me I should. There was a help file missing in program files, common files, Microsoft shared, VBA.
Mm-hmm.
So I went onto the disk, and I found that, and I stuck that into VBA, and that was okay. And then it told me a different file, and I went on the disk, and I found that, and I stuck it in VBA.
Well,
now it doesn't tell me anything. It just says I can't do it.
Oh, Bill?
Yeah?
TBRUN9. Are you running a program called TextBridge?
From Xerox.
I think
scanner.
So, yeah.
That's
OCR.
The problem. There is, and in the auto, I think it's in the auto start. Anyway, here's what you want to do. Go to the Start button, select Search or Find, and search for files or folders named *.xl?*.
*.xl?*. Okay.
Right.
Uh-huh.
One. At some point, you will find this TBRUN9 program.
Uh-huh.
That's supposed to run TextBridge from within Excel 97.
I see.
Which lets you then OCR.
It's OCR. But the problem is you're either not running TextBridge or it's not compatible with XP.
That's more like the case because a lot of scanner programs were, in XP.
So what you can do is rename it to TBRUN9.old or something like that. But make sure you're not in Excel. Make sure Excel is shut down. The next time you go into Excel, you shouldn't get that error anymore. Okie doke?
Okay.
We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a few minutes with Dave and Steve and Rob and Nick and just dang near everybody in North America on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Oh, it's our turn. Here we go. Nick, Dave, Steve, Ron on the buttons. Chuck from Rochester is on the line. Welcome, Chuck. What's your question? Chuck,
Hello?
Are you there?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead. It's your turn.
Oh, okay. Basically, I leave my monitor on for 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
And, when I go to turn my computer on, sometimes the monitor doesn't go off standby.
Mm-hmm.
So is that like my video card going, or what do you think?
Well, you might want to check it. You're running Windows 98, I take it?
Yeah, I see.
Yeah, if you go into the control panel, and there's the energy-saving options.
That's been off since I bought the computer.
You turn all those to never?
Yep, never.
All right, and then the BIOS.
How about the BIOS?
It only happened recently, and I haven't played with anything.
It's not when his computer's asleep. It's when the computer's powered off and he powers it on.
When I turn it off, the light turns orange,
mm-hmm.
and when I go to turn the computer on, Sometimes it stays orange.
If you turn the then turn the monitor off and back on, does it come on again?
No, what I have to do is I have to hit the reset button on the CPU.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I have to do it two or three times sometimes. And finally the monitor will recognize it.
That sounds like a monitor issue.
Yeah, it sounds like the monitor.
Not the card.
Well.
Yeah, it's monitor.
Not, you know, because it's, it's sending up.
You didn't want to hear that, did you, Chuck?
Well, typically it's done the other way. You turn the monitor off and leave the computer running.
But it sounds like either, now it could be one of two things, Chuck. If you're lucky, it's the cable.
Most likely the monitor.
But it's most likely the monitor. First, make sure the cable is in tight. And, you know, those little thumb screws in the back, make sure those are actually being used.
Also,
that's making a good connection.
Oh, you just brought up a good point, though. One thing you might want to do, and I've seen a lot of folks do it, is they try to jam it in there and they bend a pin.
Exactly.
Make sure none of those pins are bent. I had one person that smashed three of them.
Yeah, I didn't do that.
Well, you might not have, but if you push the machine back against the wall or somebody moved it or kicked it while they were cleaning, that thing may have come loose or it may have bent a pin. So check that.
Do you recommend that I turn the monitor off when I turn my computer off?
Yeah.
Certainly is better for your electric bill.
Yeah, and less wear and tear.
You know, if it were me, I'd do it the other way around. I'd leave the computer on all the time, just turn off the monitor.
That's what we do at the shop.
Okay,
does my computer use a lot of electricity?
It depends on the power supply, but generally no more than one or two light bulbs.
But the monitor uses a lot more.
A lot more.
On the back of every electrical device, it will tell you how much monitor or how much energy it uses. It's required by the some government regulation, but it has to tell you what the energy
drain
is.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
I'll be sure to turn my monitor off.
Yeah.
Okay then.
Fire smarter.
Have you guys ever heard of a game called Gemstone?
Yeah.
Yeah, any of you play?
Yeah, quite a few times over on MSN.
Definitely. All right, cool.
Yep.
You guys have a good day.
Thank you. It's Gemstone, and then there's Jewel. There's another good one up there.
Oh, Gemstone. I thought he said Jumpstone.
No, Gemstone.
Okay, our next caller is Kevin from Auburn. Welcome, Kevin.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good, how are you?
Good. I've got a 400 megahertz AMD powered PC that I built a couple of years ago out of an old 486 computer I had, and it's been running great until recently when programs have started performing illegal operations and they shut themselves down. And at first I thought there was some bad data on a hard drive or there was a virus, so I used troubleshooting software for the hard drive to wipe it to zero and then reinstall the programs, but I like Windows 98 and a couple of other programs, but the problem still persists. I'm thinking it's on the motherboard, or what's your idea?
Memory. Are you getting blue screens?
I'm getting like either a fatal exception sometimes, or you just get the
I would. Have you added any memory lately?
No, I haven't. It's still running on just 64 mega memory. So
then I would, matter of fact, I'd take that 64 mega stick out and go buy yourself a 256.
Really? A 256? Is that much memory?
Maybe around $50 or less?
No, I understand it's cheap, but way back when I first built this computer, they were saying maybe that's changed since then. If you use too much memory, it slows the computer down.
Much over 256 for Windows 98 is useless and can cause some problems.
He's only got a 400, so I take that back. I'd only go to a 128 because
128. Okay.
Yeah, that's about all Windows because you've only got a 400 megahertz, and I certainly wouldn't consider putting XP on that. I don't recommend XP under anything under a 600 megahertz.
The other issue is what kind of memory your machine takes. The SD RAMs are really, really cheap. The older DRAM DIMMs are getting to be very expensive.
Right, so take a look around and see what you need first, and then take a look around at prices.
Right, it takes 100 megahertz SD RAM is all it takes.
There you go.
There you go.
Very good. I appreciate your help.
You're
welcome.
Thanks, Kevin. Our next caller is Dave from Spencerport. Welcome, Dave. What's your question?
Thanks, guys, and I apologize because a couple of calls ago I came in on the end of it, and I think the guy had something like this. I'm getting a compile error and hidden module both coming in and out of Excel and Word 97. Do I use the same fix you recommended to
him? Well, it depends on what the hidden module is.
What it says on the Word is in AutoExec, and on the Excel, when you go in, it says it's AutoExec new, and when you go out, it says dist mon, but they're all in Visual Basic.
That might be a corrupted virus.
Yeah.
Visual Basic script.
Yeah, you win if you have
the virus. Yeah, virus isn't activating.
Yeah, have you scanned for any viruses?
Yes, and about 2 weeks ago, there was a virus in there that was affecting EXCs, and I got rid of it, but it looks like this may be a remnant.
Did you quarantine it or have it removed?
I removed it.
And,
did you get an error message? Did you get an error message that said it couldn't remove?
No.
Well, then what you might want to do, it might have done its damage, and sometimes depending on the virus that you had, what you might have to do is uninstall Excel and reinstall it.
Okay.
Or and the same with Word.
Right. In Word, you can rename your normal.dot.
And you can also do a repair. Also do the repair.
You might be able to do a repair. Certainly try that first. It's a lot faster.
Do a repair?
Yeah, it'll do repair and look at all the files, Word, Excel, PowerPoint.
Start the Office installer again, and one of the options is, the options are to remove, reinstall, or repair.
Okay.
And it will look through all of the Office files and try to repair any that might be damaged.
Try that first.
Thank you very much.
Okie doke. Our next caller, Phil from Rochester. Welcome, Phil. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. I love your show.
Thank you.
I had a quick question. I have a Compaq. It's a Presario. It's a very old unit. I'm running Windows 95. And I have a really small, solid 188 megahertz, or 180, I think it is.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even a Pentium, and I can't run AOL 7. Is there any way you can upgrade to a Pentium without changing the whole works?
Not on that system.
Yeah,
because
it depends on the motherboard.
It's a proprietary, motherboard, and Compaq, you have to stick with Compaq, and now you're looking at a whole new machine.
It's most likely even a proprietary case, so you couldn't even buy a generic motherboard to stick in it.
Well, there's one right out there.
Yeah,
right.
They make great hardware, but in this particular case, you can't upgrade it on your own.
Right.
And that's sort of against their best interest. They want you to buy a new machine.
Exactly, and like you said, you might still want to keep it, and use it for typing or whatever, but that's about it.
How about RAM? Any DIMM suggestions? I got 48 in there now. Can you go to?
Windows 95, you wouldn't need it.
And it also depends on what kind of memory it has in it. Machines that old might
also SIMS.
Right, they might be SIMS. They might be the early DIMMs.
No, it's DIMMs.
SIMS. So it's the FPU DIMM or maybe an EDO DIMM. It's not the current SDRAM DIMMs, which are the ones that are really
it's
cheap.
EDO.
Yep. Yeah. So the EDO DIMMs are a lot more expensive, and machines of that age had a much lower maximum limit. Your limit might be 48
right.
or 64.
To be honest with you, Phil, I wouldn't, because it is that old of a machine, I wouldn't put too much into it.
Okay.
I'd maybe look at, getting into a newer system.
All righty.
All right.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Thanks. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, with Steve, with Rob on the buttons, with me, Nick Francesco, on Soundbites 1180 WHAM. All right, let me first distance myself from that little intro there. Contact is not a verb. We all know that. It's make contact. But that's okay. We're taking your calls. We're making contact with you here on Soundbites. And we have Steve from Rochester on the line. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Well, I recently purchased a CDRW burner to put on my Windows NT machine. And it was a... basically repackaged Lite-On with a Neuro CD-ROM software.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't have the correct version for Windows NT, so I had to go to
the
Neuro website to download NCD program that would allow you to cut and paste programs directly to the CD, RW, and I installed that in the machine, but I also had a separate driver that allows the computer to see the blank CDRW disk on the machine as another blank drive.
Right.
And I copied that on, and it doesn't work.
Right. The problem is they're conflicting with each other. It's a one or the other situation here, Steve. You've got two programs trying to do exactly the same thing to exactly the same device at exactly the same time. It's no surprise that they're conflicting with each other. You have to pick one.
Even for NT.
Even for NT.
Especially for NT.
Especially for NT. You have to pick one and let it do that job.
One of the disadvantages of the what's called packet writing, when it shows up on your desktop and you drag files to it, is it's not as compatible with other CD drives in other computers. So if you're giving people disks, then you want to go with the straight build the drive and then burn it in one
right.
shot.
So you might want to take off that second one and...
Okay.
Yeah, one or the other, but not both, Steve.
Or get a second CD drive. Yeah, CD burner.
Well, the other information I do want to use is, you know, just basically, you know, I'm a mechanical designer. I do some drawings on my computer.
And you want to burn them to a CD.
Yeah, and I want to...
Then take the second...
They're too big to fit on the floppy, so...
Yeah, take off the second program and just use the straight Nero program.
Yeah, whichever one makes you happier. I mean, you know, the convenience of being able to drag things to the CD is nice. So, you know, make your pick.
Okay.
Okie doke?
Yeah.
Thanks so much. Our next caller is Victor from Rochester. Welcome, Victor. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. First, I'm running Windows 98, and my problem started developing after I uninstalled one of those wireless networking systems. I tried to run my maintenance wizard, and it won't let me. When it hits scan disk, it says checking folders. It'll run for about a minute, then it'll go file allocation, something or other.
The scan disk, you got to run in safe mode.
Which is how?
If you restart the machine, tell it to restart, hold down the F8 key or control key.
Yeah.
You'll get a menu. Option 3 is safe mode. From the safe mode, you can then safely run scan disk and defrag.
Well, nothing else is running in the background. That's why safe mode is there.
It's one of those great features that Microsoft forgot to tell folks that it won't work correctly in regular mode. You got to do it in safe mode.
Are you getting an error message in scan disk, or is it saying something interrupted and I've started over 10 times?
It runs 10 times and something's running
in the background. That's it. Right. You got it.
Yeah. If you actually get an error that there's something wrong on the disk, then you can be more worried.
Yeah. So I just press F8.
Yeah.
Well, there's a timing issue. When you
our idea is keep tapping it until you see the menu.
Or hold down the control key.
You have to do it before the Windows logo comes up.
Okay, and then what option do I look at?
Number 3, which is safe mode.
Number 3.
Safe mode.
And then I should be okay.
Whichever one is safe mode, number 3 on 98, I think.
Okay, so I'll restart my computer now. Thank you very much.
Yep,
sure.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Our next caller is Gary from Rochester. Welcome, Gary. What's your question?
I have two questions. One is about a virus.
Repeat it again.
One is about a virus.
Okay. Which is?
SULFNBK hoax.
Sulfenbeck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Know about that?
Yeah.
Actually, if you go to our website, go to the WHAM website, WHAM1180.com. Go to the lower right of the main menu, not the splash, lower left of the other right, the lower left of the main menu, not the splash screen, but the main menu. You'll see a button for sound bites. You go to that page, and it'll let you send us a comment, not a question, by the way, but a comment. And from there, you can get to our website, soundbites.org. And if you go down to the lower right of the sound bites page, you'll see... one of the frequently asked questions, FAQs, on restoring sulfenbeck.exe. What it is, why it happens, and the fact that it's actually a hoax.
It was a hoax, but it messed up a lot of computers.
Yeah.
And folks wound up going through with it.
I don't have to worry about it, right?
No, if you haven't done anything to your machine, you don't have to do anything to your machine.
Right. No, I haven't.
Good. Then don't, and you won't mess it up.
Okay, second question. I took advantage of the memory prices.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I went ahead and I put 640 in my computer.
Yeah.
And it takes forever to count the memory when I start up.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
The more you have, the longer it takes.
I realize. How
some systems. Well, some systems let you bypass the memory.
By hitting the escape key.
Or spacebar or something.
There's also in many of the BIOS programs, depending on whose BIOS you're running,
I got an Intel Seattle 440BX board.
Yeah. Well, all right. But somewhere in the memory could be there is a choice to either skip the memory count or fast memory count or quick boot.
Quick boot, yeah.
Yeah. They're called many things depending on which version of the BIOS you have. But if you set that, you should get much faster through the check.
The other issue is that Windows 98 can't really take advantage of more than 256 megs.
So going to
640 megs, you actually could slow things down.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, do you think I might want to take one of them out? One of the 256 chips?
What speed of a machine is it?
It's a Pentium 3 550. It's got a 64 meg video card in it.
You might want to look at
Back the memory down a bit, and it won't take so long to count, and Windows can actually run more efficiently.
XP is the only thing that would take advantage
of. Save that chip. If you decide to go to XP, then certainly XP will use that extra memory.
Okay, my next question, how can I save that chip without static electricity? Because my apartment has a ton of static electricity.
What you want to
do... still have the original bags that came in.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have that.
Then too bad.
you need to get an anti-static bag.
Yeah, you need an anti-static bag.
You may be able to buy... I don't know if they sell those at any of the local computer stores.
If he stops down in my shop, I can give them one.
Yeah, we have boxes of them.
Oh, that's right.
That we
that's
keep.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, if he stops down in my shop, I can give you one.
Okay, where's your shop again?
It's Enright PC Management, and we're at 3385 Brighton Henrietta Town Line Road.
Okay, great.
Okay, I'll give
you one. Have a good day, you guys.
Okay.
Thanks, Gary. You too. Our next caller is Joe from Rochester. Hey, Joe, what do you know?
Guys, a question about power supplies. What would be some problems of power supply? Would if it wasn't enough power, like it's an AMD 750 Duran, it's a 250 power supply.
Yeah, no, you need power. Yeah, you need at least a 300
minimum.
Minimum. Would now the computer was running fine. Would it'd be like a gradual problem?
You got it.
Mm-hmm. It could easily be. The problem is you're just not getting enough juice, and over time that wears components out.
Okay.
And if you recently added a new
card,
it'll
wear,
it may
wear,
need more.
Or another hard drive or a floppy or any, you know, anything you add might take you over that little limit.
Excellent. Or just over time, that much power drain on a power supply. Yeah, it might work for a while, but constant use of it slowly wears it down, and then all of a sudden, boom,
and you're undervolting the rest of the system and can actually wear out and damage the rest of the components as well.
That's my next question. So the system's only about, I'd probably say, 4 months old, 3 months old.
Yeah, it doesn't take long.
So hopefully no damage.
No, there shouldn't be any damage. That what I would recommend, like you said, is get at least 300 or better power supply.
Okay. One other quick question. A basic setup, ATA 100 hard drive with a CD-ROM drive, IDE CD-ROM drive. Hooking up on the channels, the ATA 100 goes on the primary, obviously.
Primary master, yeah.
Yeah, the primary CD-ROM, master is your hard drive.
Would a CD-ROM go on a primary IDE or a secondary IDE?
Either or.
If those are your only two devices, the best thing would be to make that the secondary master, because the issue with IDE...
On the second channel.
Right, the issue with IDE is the primary and master on the same chain can't work at the same time.
Okay.
One has to shut down to let the other one start up.
So then those two share, then the IDE master and the ATA 100 master share. You're saying?
Correct.
Right. Well, no. There are two. The two chains are basically the two ribbon cables.
Right.
What you want to make sure with a writer, is this a writer or a reader?
Well, I can go into another question on that one. But right now, it's just a reader.
All right.
Okay.
But prepping for the writer, the reader, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Completely doesn't matter where you put it.
It could even be on the same chain as the hard drive.
The writer, however, should be on a different chain from the devices you're writing from. So if you're going CD to CD, it should be on different chains. If you're going from hard drive to CD, it should be on different chains. So when you get the CD writer, put it on its own chain.
And what if you do both, though? Sometimes you write
you put directly. You put the other two on the one chain and this thing on the other chain.
You have your hard drive and CD writer, a reader, on the first chain. You put your burner on the second IDE channel.
There you go.
Okay.
Joe, we got to go. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to get some news. But if you're on the line, stay on the line. If you're not on the line, why not? We'll be back in a few minutes anyway with Dave, Steve, Rob on the buttons, me, Nick Francesco on Soundbites at 1180 WHAM. Apparently, it's hard not to get hold of us if you have a phone. We'll be going back to those phones in just a couple of minutes. But before we do that, we want to take a look at the poll. Every week at soundbites.org, we have a poll. Last week's poll question was, what web browser do you use? Steve made a comment about this last week. The first time we did this poll, there were like three choices.
Yeah.
Now there's like 110. The winner, shockingly, was Internet Explorer with 166 votes, 59% of the votes. 279 of you voted this week. That's wonderful.
That's
Thank
wild.
You so much. I love to hear that. Second was Netscape Navigator with 24%. 6% of you are using AOL. 6% of you are using Opera. 2% of you are using something else. And then trailing, Conqueror, Galleon, which are both Linux-based browsers, had 2 votes apiece. Lynx, which is a text-based browser, had 2 votes. And Mozilla, which is the free version of Netscape has the open source version of Netscape had one vote for a total of 279. Exactly right. Yeah, I figured he was either Conqueror or Galleon. But we want to thank each and every one of you who voted. This week's poll, we already have 51 votes. Let's see if we can beat that 279.
That'd be wild.
This week's poll, thanks to Paul Doering, who I believe is no longer participating. Where did you acquire your most recent upgrade or add-on? And the choices are local retail, mail-order retail, eBay, or another auction site, which has just doubled its price, by the way. A friend or relative, or why was the surveillance camera on? Which I thought was a pretty funny
choice.
Yeah,
I like that.
And we have, like I said, so far we've got 52 votes, so please vote in the poll, soundbites.org. If you have a poll
idea,
please send it to pollideas@soundbites.org, and we'll put that in the hopper and get them out here. I'm always interested in knowing what other people would like to know, so give us a shout about that. And while you're on the Soundbites webpage, please feel free to join the forums. We've got 409 registered users currently. The number is now the same, by the way.
Yes, I noticed
that. That was my fault. I fixed that. We have 409 registered users. The latest one is Kay Pierce.
And please put in where you're from. City and state. And not that we're going to pass any of this information on. We're just curious to know where our listening audience is coming from.
That's all we're interested in. You do have to register in the forums to keep your username and stuff like that, because obviously the stuff you write is linked to the username that wrote it. But we don't collect any information you don't want to give us. We'd love to know what city and state you're from, but that doesn't really narrow you down much.
Yeah, really.
So if you do that for us, we would love that. Vote in the polls, join the forums, and we'll get back to the phones now at 222-1180. If you're outside the 585 area code, it's 800-295-1180 on the Choice One toll-free hotline. No, it's not that hot. It's just a line. And then if you're a Verizon Wireless customer, pull over to the side of the road and dial *1180.
Now, is this Chili and Victor or Victor and Chili?
That's exactly right. Well, but I think we'll just go to Victor and Chilai.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's your question?
Questions about Windows 98. Back on the 29th of December, you gave a method to reinstall Windows 98 from DOS, and I was unable to write it down. Could you repeat that? I have one other question after that.
Do you want to do a clean install or install over and install?
Install over.
Install fresh or over an existing?
Existing.
All right. All you have to do is simply put your CD in, and that'll automatically start, and you can overwrite it.
From a cold power down, put the CD in, power down, power back up, and if your BIOS is new enough and set correctly, it'll boot from the CD.
Now,
you may have to go into your BIOS and tell it to boot from the CD first over the hard drive.
Now, if that doesn't work, what you can do is put your CD in, and what you can do is copy the contents of the Windows 98 CD over to a folder on your hard drive.
Well, you don't need the entire contents. You just need the Win98 subdirectory.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. You copy that subdirectory, Win98 folder, over to your hard drive. Then, from a DOS prompt, you can CD into that Windows 98 subdirectory and just type setup, and it will automatically start the reinstall of the program.
You can shut down Windows and choose restart in DOS mode, and that takes you back into DOS mode completely.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't do it from a DOS window. You have to be in DOS mode.
Okay, I think I got that.
There you go.
The other question I have is, what is the problem with a system that doesn't come back the same each time you launch it? In other words, if I go to Control Panel, and previously I had icons showing, now I go back and I launch it again. In other words, I shut down and launch the next day. It'll come up in details in the Control Panel. And sometimes even a flashlight will come up like it's looking for it, and then it then pops up. What's the story there?
The story is that Windows 98 doesn't really save your preferences well. That's one of the things they didn't really get right until 2000.
And one.
This is something that basically cropped up.
It works for a while, and then it stops, and you can't get it back.
Yep.
In your...
It's the way Windows works, and there is no fix for it except to upgrade to one of the versions where it doesn't happen, or at least hasn't happened yet, I guess.
You can try to start the problem over again, where it will remember for a while, by going into the view folder options and setting your current settings, and that may work for a little bit until it dies again.
If you put the view the way you want it, hold the shift key down and hit F5 in that view, it's supposed to retain it. If that works for you, God bless you. It's supposed to work.
Okay.
You'd think the default would be to always retain every view setting I change.
That is the default.
It just doesn't work.
Does it work? I'm sorry. I realize it's an incredibly unsatisfactory answer, but you're using Windows, and that's what you get.
Okay, thanks a lot. You're doing a great job.
Thank you so much. Our next caller, I thought I was going to be polite to Windows this week. Apparently not. Our next caller is George from Greece. Welcome, George. What's your question?
How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I've got a Dell 533, and I've got Windows 98 SE on it.
Mm-hmm.
And since I got the computer, I'm unable to defrag the hard drive. When I tried to go into defrag...
Have you tried doing it in safe mode?
Well, let me go through.
Let him ask the question.
When I tried to go through defrag, a message comes up that says, drive's contents changed, restarting.
And yeah, it does that 10 times.
Right.
Yeah.
I tried going into safe mode, but the way that I was told to do that, trying to get in there before Windows starts up... Mm-hmm. Currently, I'm not able to do that.
Hold the control key down while the computer is starting. As long as you got Windows 98 Second Edition,
right?
And you hold down the control key, it will bring up that menu to start. Option 3 is safe mode.
Okay.
Yeah. The trick with the F8 is that after it counts your memory, after it detects your devices, while it's still in that DOS-ish window,
right?
It'll say starting Windows 95. You have about half a
98.
Second. Or 98.
Yeah.
You have about half a second between starting Windows 98 and the Windows logo comes up.
Right.
In order for the F8 key to actually activate.
That's why what I do is the minute it starts, I just pound on that F8 key.
Or if you start too soon, it fills your keyboard buffer and then it doesn't work.
Right. Just hold the control key down.
What I tried doing is holding the control key down, and it was kind of, I could hear a little, ticking or something, in the background.
Yeah, as soon as it's done counting the memory.
Well, the ticking means that the keyboard buffer is full. It can't accept any more keys, and it's basically going to ignore anything you type.
Right, because one time it came up and it said I had a keyboard error.
Mm-hmm. Right. What you want to do is wait until after the memory counts up, you see a few more things. The minute the memory stops, start tapping on that F8 key. Not banging on it, but tap, tap, tap.
I tried that a couple times, but it doesn't seem like I could really
then
catch it.
Then try holding, after the memory counting that, hold down the control key. But after
don't
the
tap
the
it,
count. Just hold it down.
Right, so after
there's
it counts up and it says I'm up to the 128 memory,
right. Yes.
And hold control down, and that should bring me in.
There's a parameter you can set. It was in the MS-DOS.sys, so it always asks the menu every time you start up, which is annoying.
Yeah, menu equals one, I think.
Yeah.
Right.
Give that a shot.
Okay, we'll give it a shot. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye. Okay, thanks. Our next caller, Charlie from Geneva. Welcome, Charlie. What's your question?
Hi, good afternoon, guys. Great show.
Thank you.
Say, I'm running Windows 98 SE, and periodically I'll be getting this Explorer window come up and it says this program has done an illegal operation. It's going to shut down.
What error code?
Error code?
Yeah, does it give it an OD code or an OE?
OE, I believe.
And does it say, usually say error, illegal operation, OE, blah, 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 in module, blah, blah, blah. We need that module, blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole slew of numbers that come up if you go to
the... It's not the numbers, but after the numbers, it'll say in module something, like VXD
or
VFAT or something. Something.
Okay, all that's there if you hit details on the window.
Unfortunately, that's going to give us more of a clue than just the fact you have illegal operations. But does this happen in every program?
Kids get it, and I've gotten it in a couple of the sites too, but it doesn't seem to follow a pattern.
It happens when you're running programs on your computer or when you're on the internet?
When I'm on the net, I've got Roadrunner. So.
Okay, it is possible that your problem is a Java problem.
What version of Internet Explorer are you using?
I upgraded to 6.
It's certainly possible that you've got a Java problem.
How much memory do you have? IE6 with Java needs a lot of memory.
Exactly.
Oh, no, that's what happened.
At least 128.
I lost 2 gigabytes, like, right now.
Not hard drive space.
Oh, hard drive.
Memory.
Oh, I'm sorry.
64 meg, 128 meg, 256 meg.
Man, I can't remember.
Okay, here's the deal.
Can't remember, guys.
If you've got less than 128 meg, you've got a real problem.
Uh-huh.
If you only have a 128 meg, you probably have a problem.
You can find out how much memory you have by right-clicking on My Computer, choosing Properties, and in that window it tells you how much memory you have total.
Oh, that's right.
And that'll tell you. So if it may well be that you simply do not have enough memory. The other thing that it could be is that you need some updates. If you go to Internet Explorer, select Tools, one of the choices will be Windows Update.
Right, I've done that. That's where I went from 5 to 6.
Right. But there are updates.
Also the critical
then
update.
Do it again, right. You have to keep doing it again until it says
I've got
no
the
updates.
Critical, that little bug eye that comes up in my critical update warning thing supposed to tell me when the criticals come up.
Right, but there are also some that are not critical. Well, also, don't forget, Microsoft's had a little trouble with Windows Update recently. They have, so you need to go there and do it by hand.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, basically go there till it says you don't have any updates.
Okay,
and then there's recommended updates that sometimes you shouldn't do anyway.
Charlie, we have to take a break.
Okay,
thanks a lot.
Okay, well, thanks a lot, guys.
Yep.
I appreciate it.
We'll see you. Thanks. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave, Steve, Rob, me, Nick Francesco on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Francesco sitting right next to Dave Enright, who's sitting right next to Steve Ray. All three of us are looking at Rob Linton. And everybody's talking to Richard from Henrietta. Richard, you popular person, you.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
I got a couple questions about Outlook Express.
Don't use it. Next question.
Outlook Express 6.0.
Don't use that either. Next question.
If you keep the updates and on all the critical updates in, it's fairly safe.
Semi-fairly safe.
And your antivirus program is the big key.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
So what's up?
Well, I got a Palm Pilot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I got more than one email account set up. And when I synchronize, it's not always a good thing.
No, it isn't. No.
Is the only way to get the right email on the Palm Pilot is to make sure that
it syncs to one or the other.
I log off the current identity before I ever synchronize?
Yep.
You really want to be in the identity that you're syncing to.
Okay.
That's safest.
Okay.
Palm is not really designed to do multiple identities. So it really, I think, better to be in the identity you want than to be in no identity.
Definitely.
Okay.
So give that a try. Let us know.
Now I received an email saying that, you know, because one of the problems with Outlook is those wonderful viruses that, take advantage of everyone on your contact list.
Right.
And this said that if you set up a contact...
No.
The name 00
I'm sorry. I apologize. I don't mean to be rude about that, but I've heard it about a million times over the past month.
Doesn't
Here's
work.
The deal.
It's like one of those hoaxes going around.
Okay. If in fact, a virus sent to all on your mailing list simultaneously, that would work. But it doesn't happen that way.
Okay.
It randomly picks people.
Okay, so it's a bunch of baloney. All right.
So even if it does pick that one, it gets an error message sending to that single address,
but
still sends
that.
To all the other ones.
Yeah, move
right.
that.
Okay, now I got a Kodak camera, connected USB.
Yeah.
Okay, I see it on my Windows Explorer.
Mm-hmm.
I drop and drag multiple files, you know, select all, drag them all to the folder on my hard drive. Life is good. I install Roadrunner with a USB modem, and now I can only move the files one at a time if I don't want to completely lock up my machine.
What OS are you running?
98 SE.
And have you installed all the USB updates?
There's a USB update.
Okay, I'll make sure I've got all the USB updates.
And the annoying thing is they're not always listed at Windows Update. Sometimes you have to download them manually, and that's annoying.
But
you want to search around and look for all the updates for Windows 98, in particular the USB updates. The other thing you might want to do is take a look at the manual for your motherboard and see whether you have USB 1.0. Or 1.1. How old is your machine?
Oh, it would be 1.0.
Okay.
That's how old it is. I had to wire it myself.
That could be part of the problem.
1.1 USB addressed a lot of the multi-device issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 1.0 was did not play well with others.
I mean, I have no problem with multi-device issues except for that one.
Right.
Yeah, well, but that
also,
is one.
But
you
look
also
for
might
the
want
update.
To check. Yeah, you might want to check Kodak's website for USB updates for that camera and the cable modem. Are they still using the Toshiba cable modem?
Doxus, yeah.
You might need a USB update for the cable modem itself.
What I found to work even better is, does yours have the memory card in it,
the camera?
Yeah.
What I wound up getting is what they call a SanDisk,
And the SanDisk
is one of the brands.
Yeah,
several different brands.
Different one of the brands, but I just hooked that up to the USB, and I can sit there, put that in, and it looks just like another storage device that I can click and,
yeah,
you know.
It's essentially a memory card reader in a USB device.
So
yeah,
it shows up as a drive letter.
Card readers are great.
Yeah. That might help. But again, you may have the same problem. Do the updates first.
All right, great. Thanks, guys.
Okey-doke. Thank you very much. Our next caller to Sound Bites is Steve from Rochester. Welcome, Steve. What's your question?
Da-da-da-da-da.
Hello, Steve.
Steve, are you there?
Steve, I just gave you the greatest send-up of anybody. You're not even there? Steve? Okay, Steve.
We lost Steve.
That's the last time. Now we're just going to talk to Howard from Irondequoit.
Hey, Howard.
Well, you give him a big update.
Yay. Well, that's
Steve?
It.
Howard, take advantage of
Steve?
It.
Howard.
Go ahead.
Howard from Irondequoit.
Da-da-da-da-da. Okay, guys, hey, I just purchased a HP 4400 scanner,
mm-hmm.
Windows 98 second edition.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot load the program.
Did you first load the program before hooking up the scanner?
That is correct. Following the instructions on that,
right.
I was in with HP at their site for quite a bit of time. We went through a bunch of things, tried it in safe mode, copied the contents onto the...
from the CD to the hard drive.
To the hard drive, and then tried there. Now, the interesting thing, there are several programs that came on that CD.
Mm-hmm.
They all loaded. There's about six other programs. They loaded okay.
Asked them for a new CD.
I did. They sent me a new CD, the same problem. I took the same CD, went to another machine,
and it loaded okay.
There's what something you might, else in your computer it doesn't like.
Yeah, what
yeah there's
you
something
might,
in there.
What you might need to do... is shut down. Do you have any? Did you have an older HP printer?
I have a 930 printer. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Well, here's your problem.
Did you install a scanner or a printer?
I just installed a scanner.
Scanner. But it's still possible. Yeah.
Here's the problem. HP writes this HP Director software. Their hardware is phenomenal. Their software is junk. I probably can't say crap on the air, can I? Probably.
You just did.
So it's junk. And what you need to do is to shut down the scanner software, the other HP software, before you install the new HP software. And then whether they run together is, you know...
Anybody's guess.
Yeah, and that should have happened when he tried to install in safe
mode. Yes, it should have, but it did not.
Because it's a delivery service.
Exactly. So you need to shut all that stuff down.
I took a program of another scanner, HP scanner... the LTX, and it loaded right on that same program, computer.
Yes, but it is possible that those two programs, one of those three programs now that you have there, are interfering with one of the others. So you really need to shut down all the others before you load the
are
one.
Are you running a virus checker?
Yes, I do.
You might want to turn that off.
Yeah, I did. What I did there went into msconfig, and then on the bottom where it has...
Yep.
Run setup program.
Yep.
I checked that, restarted the computer, nothing in it.
Including all those other HP programs?
Yes, they're not in the startup.
No, they're not in the startup, but they still run.
They're not on the taskbar.
No, there's some in the registry.
And there's some in the registry.
Right.
So you really need to go through msconfig and shut down all the HP software before you install your antivirus before you install the new software.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right, I'll try that.
Okey-doke.
Thanks much.
Thanks so much. We are going to take another break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Sound Bites on 1180 WHAM.
They would rather do their show in a chat room. It's Sound Bites with Nick Francesco on News Radio 1180 WHAM.
Truly, every once in a while, I would prefer to talk than to type.
Yeah, really.
I have to admit that. We're back. It's Sound Bites. I'm Nick. He's Dave. He's Steve. He's Rob. And he's TJ from Penfield. Welcome, TJ. What's your question?
Well, thank you, although I was hoping for Steve's introduction. In any event, I have a nice dilemma. I have a little background. Dell computer bought in August 2000, P3, 733, 128. I have another 128 stick and holding, but I heard that Windows 98 SE doesn't really do a lot with that.
Right.
To the point of upgrading an office or at least getting PowerPoint, but I found for a legal but ridiculously low amount of a double-digit type, I could go up to Office, but I could do Windows 2000 Office or XP. I could also get the operating system for this ridiculously low price, educational based. So it's real low. Other than Office, the only other semi-plain vanilla thing that I would do would be very amateur video editing. And I just don't know whether 2000 is a little more stable than XP or...
How fast is your processor?
It's a 733.
You could easily do XP.
Yeah.
Home or professional, though?
Yeah, they when I got Dell, I had the upgrade for the Windows egocentric version. I don't mention the other one. It upsets Dave, I know.
Yeah.
Thank you.
The difference between home and professional really is the number of connections you can make and what you can connect to.
And
the home version, will not allow you to connect to a regular network, only to a peer-to-peer network. So if you're only going to connect to a peer-to-peer network, you can do home.
They only offer it, which isn't bad, professional for like $20.
Yeah,
Okay. So do a clean install? I mean, from the just wipe it out?
Yes. More important for video editing is the video card, its speed, and the drivers. So if you have a card that is fast, has lots of memory, and has certified Windows XP drivers, you will fly.
Mm-hmm. And do NTFS FAT.
Instead of FAT.
Right.
Which is a more efficient way of storing data on the hard drive.
It's faster, more efficient, and more secure way of storing data.
And more stable.
Yeah, but there's a 2 terabyte limit.
Yes, there is.
We run into that quite often.
Well, we never thought we'd run into the 540 meg limit.
That's right. You video editing guys, though, you've run into that kind of stuff. NTFS, the NTFS file system.
Okay.
Okie doke.
Excellent. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Pleasure. Thank you. You will want to upgrade your RAM, by the way, too. Our next caller.
Yeah, you said you had that sitting aside.
Yeah, right. Our next caller is Lynn from Rochester. Welcome, Lynn. What's your question?
Hi, Nick. First, I want to say I very much enjoy this show and your TV show.
Thank you so much. I love to hear that.
Thanks.
Wow, groupie who's a female.
Yeah.
That's so rare for me. Only in this for the groupies. Go ahead. What's your question, Lynn?
Well, I don't know if I'm going to represent females too well here because I think I went places where I wasn't smart enough to go.
We all do. That's what makes us human. Go ahead.
We have 2 hard drives. The original one that came with the computer, which when you would go to my computer said C&D.
Right.
Then we added another one, which was partitioned 3 ways, so that was E, F, and G. A few nights ago, I started having some mouse problems where it wouldn't let me right-click, it wouldn't let me scroll. So I started looking around for ways to fix it. And went from bad to worse, and then started going into all those F keys and different things.
Yes.
Now, all I have is my C and D drive. The E, F, and G disappeared.
Well, believe it or not, you've got the 2 hard drives. Because C is one drive, D would be the next. Any, subdividing is then broken up thereafter.
So E was actually the first drive again, F and G is the second drive.
Yeah. Right.
When you were not fixing things, did you go into the BIOS at any point?
I don't know.
Well, yep. If you did, you may have changed the...
That wouldn't get rid of partitions. Losing partitions.
Well, she could have lost the second hard drive completely, so now C and D are only the first hard drive.
I was going to say all of the files
Okay.
Right?
You may need to go into BIOS and make sure that both your IDE channels are set
to auto
detect.
Oh, the very first screen. If you hit the delete key and go to the very first screen on the left-hand side, it shows you the date and time and all that.
So it depends on your motherboard, whether it's delete or control F1 or whatever your BIOS key is.
Usually when it's booting up, you'll see across the bottom, press something to go into setup.
Right, F1.
But within that screen...
Yes, press F1 then.
Then you'll see that on the left-hand side, the very first screen displays the date, the time, and your various hard drives. What you want to do is make sure that all 4 of them are set to auto. Because what might have happened is it might have lost, the setting, or it's confused or whatever, and you might want to have it just auto-check it.
Another thing to check is that the cable might have come wiggled loose.
Try that one.
Right.
How old is the machine?
Getting there.
It might be? No, it might be a battery. It might be the battery that it lost the configuration in there, and... you need that changed. Is it losing any date, any time at all? Do you notice?
No, only if you play Snoot or something.
But you might want to have the battery checked out. But go into the BIOS, and then, like I said, that first screen, make sure all 4 devices
Okay, I'm on that screen and I don't see them. Where am I?
They should say auto.
Yeah, you might have to go down a menu or two to get the IDE setup or device setup, something like that. When the machine boots and your BIOS summary screen is being displayed, it should detect and show you each of the hard drives and any CDs you have, what's on each of those four IDE
And if it doesn't, then definitely either you have a hard drive problem.
Yeah, that's what I was afraid of.
Which is possible.
Yeah.
Or the BIOS has stopped detecting them. And as Dave said, if you go into the BIOS, when you go into your BIOS, do you see a list of choices in two columns, or do you see a bunch of stuff on the screen with little tabs across the top, or a menu across the top?
I don't even know if I'm in my BIOS. I hit the F1, and now I'm on a screen that's like blue and gray.
Yep.
Okay.
And what does it say on that screen?
Time.
Yeah, if you click on the, press that.
Whoa. You're on the one that says date and time.
Yeah.
You have to keep going down until you find the one that says drive setup or IDE
auto
setup
detect.
Or device setup.
You can do the auto detect.
Well, right, but it might be a sub-menu inside of there somewhere.
Well, the easiest way, though, to see if it's actually seen it, that when the machine is booting, you usually see the screen go black and there's a black triangular of information up at the top of the screen.
Rectangle, actually.
Rectangle. If you press the pause key, it'll tell you whether it found all the hard drives, because it'll list the primary, the secondary, slave, and masters. And if it doesn't show your second hard drive there, then you know you've got a hard drive issue.
All right, I'm sorry, I need to go back just very quickly. Lynn, the screen you're on now shows the date and the time.
Yes.
What does it say under that?
Floppy options, press enter.
What does it say under that?
Primary IDE master quantum fireball.
You're on the right page. Keep going, keep reading.
Primary IDE slave.
Yeah.
Not installed.
Correct.
Secondary IDE master, and then it's got FX120T.
Okay.
Secondary IDE slave not installed.
Do you also have a CD-ROM drive?
Yes.
You lost the hard drive.
Right. Yeah.
So one of those not installed should be installed.
What you might want to do is if you can select one of those not installed, and using, I don't know if it would be the up and down key or the plus and minus key, set it to auto. In fact, do both of them.
How do I set it to auto? I'm on it.
Well, go to the.
You're on the line that says not installed.
Right.
If you press up or down the plus or minus key, what happens?
Plus or minus key?
On the keypad there on the right.
Yeah, it just beeps at me.
Okay, so hit the enter
right,
key.
Right, the enter key should bring up
the menu.
Brings
it up.
Yeah, that might bring up
the
menu.
Now I'm on IDE device config disabled.
There you go.
Enable it.
By doing
highlighting enable,
or click on hit enter, and you get a choice of enable disable.
I've got a choice of auto configured.
Auto, that's what you want. And you want to do that for the other one as well, and then reboot and see if they come back. Unfortunately, we have got to take a break now. But try that and let us know what happens.
All right, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave and Steve and Rob and me, Nick Francesco, on 1180 WHAM.
This is Soundbites with Nick Francesco. Whether it's a computer problem or computer-related problem, these guys can help. Call the boys now at 222-1180, the Choice One toll-free line at 1-800-295-1180, or *1180, a free call for Verizon Wireless subscribers. Now, here's Nick Francesco.
Yo, 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 we be jamming on computers. I'm Nick Francesco. We have Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons. Dave calling all the way from Victor.
Hi, guys.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I've had a
recursive loop here.
I've had a very frustrating ordeal with Hewlett-Packard lately. Similar to something you've already spoken to a little while ago, I think.
Yeah.
But I bought a new Dell computer a year ago with Office 2000 Professional, Windows 2000.
Yeah.
And at the time I had an Office Jet 600 and attempted with Hewlett-Packard's help to download the drivers necessary for that 600 with no success. Finally gave up and used it independent of the computer. Until it died about a month ago, and I bought a new K60. multifunction, just like the old one, Office Jet. And when I click on the icon after I've loaded the software, the director comes up, and it often freezes.
Yep.
I mean, I've been on the phone. We've deleted the old 600 files. We've gone way into the computer, deleted everything, to the point now where it's finally working, but it's fragile. You can tell it's, I mean, if Norton is on, and I click on and the director comes up, it'll freeze sometimes. Other times it'll freeze for a little while.
I have to reiterate, Dave, HP's hardware is phenomenal. Their software is trash junk.
Okay.
You know,
tell us how you really feel.
I told this to HP people. I love their hardware. Their software stinks. They don't have two people who know how to code in that entire building. There really is no answer for this. Everybody on Earth is having these problems. I own a LaserJet 1220.
Uh-huh.
And it's the same multifunction thing.
Right.
It'll run fine on anything higher than 98 and lower than XP.
Uh-huh.
As long as you're not doing much else.
Right.
God forbid you try to network it. So that multiple share it so multiple people can use it.
Not gonna happen.
God forbid you try to install it on XP or anything lower than NT. Their software is trash, and I don't know of a way around that. I wish I had a better answer.
Does 2000 complicate it, though? Or
2000 and NT, theoretically, are really the best things to put it on.
Okay.
Were you able to get the latest drivers for the new printer downloaded from HP?
Well, we just went through that, did that successfully, and again, I probably made... To HP and Dell, I've made 50 calls in the last 2 weeks, probably.
When you installed this stuff, did you stop running everything else on your system? And I mean everything else.
Yes. Disabled Norton, turned iOmega off.
Yep.
Yeah. That's
the way to do it, but like Nick said, the drivers are inconsistent.
I hate to say this, but the drivers are trash.
Now, theoretically, will they improve those drivers so that in 2 months...
Well, historically, no.
Now,
they've never done that.
Yeah, but the thing that is, are you using the USB port on this or the parallel port?
USB.
Try switching it to the parallel port. Now, I just had a client was having all kinds of problems with their drivers as far as the USB.
Right.
We said, the heck with this. Hooked up a IEEE printer cable.
Right.
Works fine.
Okay, now I've got the parallel, what's it called? What's the USB? What's the other?
No, you don't want USB. You just want a regular parallel port cable.
Parallel port cable.
Well, the parallel port right now is speaking to a Panasonic that runs my bills, you know.
Well, then what you can do is either get an AB switch or a second parallel port card.
Just try it on a parallel for a while.
I do have the AB switch, so that's what I'm saying.
Well, the problem is that a lot of the printers don't like switches because they communicate back and forth to the computer.
What we're saying is that just try it on the parallel thing. See if that solves the problem. Then you've at least narrowed it down. You can go back to the HP people and say, look, it works great on parallel, but I can't use it there in my business.
Right.
What's the problem with USB?
Okay.
That's the place to start. I don't know that it's a solution, but it's a place to start.
Okay.
Okie doke.
I appreciate your help.
Thanks so much.
See ya.
Our next caller is Ken from Pittsburgh. Welcome, Ken. What's your question?
It's good to get in. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Well, your success is tough on your listeners.
Thank you. That's why we like a longer show.
Yeah, we have mixed emotions. Well, thank you very much. I won't waste any time on the plaudits, although you guys deserve plenty.
Thank you.
Real quick. Hit on some memory issues.
Mm-hmm.
You answered a question a little while ago for me nicely that my AMD Duron 750 on a Compact Presario could handle PC 133, that it was smart enough to handle it.
Yep.
And I installed it. That's great. I looked on the board, and it says, printed on the board near the memory slot, it says PC 100 1-2, PC 133 2-3. And I was wondering if you can use the PC 133 in all three slots, or am I limited to PC 100 in the first two and PC 133 in the second two?
Well, is it PC 100 1-2?
1-2, I believe.
And PC 133 2-3?
Correct.
Then what that means is PC 133 in number three,
two
PC 100 in one, and two will take either.
Oh, okay.
All right, so you do have to maintain, in this case, what came with it, the 64.
And that's actually rather odd, because the memory bus is usually 100 or 133, and it won't switch.
Oh, you know what you're looking at? You're looking at the jumper.
Ah, there you go.
If it was a jumper. I don't know what a jumper is, but
that's what you're looking at.
Which, next to that, it should say something like J9, J15, to tell, which tells you the jumper number. Then you still have to find it.
What that tells you is that you can set the memory to be either PC100 or PC133. And then you have to use all that same memory in the machine.
And that sets the system bus speed, which then your processor also has to be able to understand.
Well, the theory is that sets that, but you're right.
Yeah.
Boy, I wish you could see my eyes glazing over.
Well, the thing is, there's a million choices you can make and a million different things you can do in the system, but there's no promise that you're going to get it all on the first try. What happens is when you get it wrong, you start this machine up and it just freezes.
Right.
And then you do it again and it freezes.
Yep.
And you do it again and suddenly it's booting and you win.
Now, the adding of memory is a very simple thing that you know, most of us can do.
But here's the one key thing, like I mentioned in my news article at the top when we first opened up, static electricity.
Yep.
Make sure the machine is turned off but plugged in. Most homes are, you know, have grounds. So this way, if you open the system up, you touch that power supply, this way you ground yourself.
Yep.
And then attempt to put memory in.
And that's not to protect you, that's to protect the memory.
Yeah, we don't care about you.
We just care
about the computer.
Fry your butt, but,
yeah.
You know.
I have a quick follow-up, though. In that case, if it comes off the floor and it's got 64 meg PC100, I believe, I can fill slots 2 and 3 with 133 without a problem.
And it will drop down to 100.
That's right.
Okay.
Yeah.
When you say without a problem,
I know that.
It's likely there won't be a problem.
All right.
You're safer if you buy PC100 memory.
Okay.
But then you're limited, and
but
if you try to move to a new motherboard.
And so, you know, the chances are likely that it'll be fine.
Will memory, bad memory manifest itself?
Oh, yeah.
In a million different ways. Yeah, but don't forget, memory's like any other thing. It can go bad. But I hear the music behind us.
Well, memory rarely goes bad when it's counting up the memory, which is supposed to test it.
Right. But we do have to go. I want to apologize to everybody we didn't get to. I want to thank all our callers. Please vote in the poll and join the Soundbites Forum at soundbites.org. I want to thank Dave Enright, Steve Ray, Rob Linton on the buttons. I'm Nick Francesco. We'll be back here next Saturday at 12:20 on Soundbites on 1180 WHAM. Yeah.